You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison. Stay tuned at 6 o'clock, Blues Cruise with Dave Watts and the professor, Bill Clark. At 8 o'clock, Something Else with Harry Ragg. But coming up right now, Labor Radio. Welcome to Madison Labor Radio. Labor Radio is dedicated to bringing news, information, and cultural events focused on working people and the labor movement to the Madison area and surrounding communities. I'm Gil Halstead, a former member of the Wisconsin Education Association Council and United Faculty and Staff. Your support is necessary to make Labor Radio and all the great programming on WORT possible.
Hi, I'm Ann Habel, a retired member of AFSCME 171, UW Blue Collar Workers. Today, we bring you a report from this week's rally for nurses at Meritor, share coverage of the hands-off rally in Madison, learn about a recent wage theft incident, discuss the faculty resolution on Palestine, and much more.
Defend the workers who cannot organize, and the bosses send their lackeys out to cheat us.
Nurses at Unity Point Meritor Hospital rallied this week for a new contract, promising a strike if talks don't improve. Greg Jaboski reports.
When American workers are under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
What do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
What do we do?
On Tuesday afternoon of this week, April 8th, the nurses of Madison's Unity Point Meritor Hospital, represented by SCEIU Wisconsin, held a street-side rally at Brittingham Park on East Washington Street near South Park Street, not far from Meritor, saying that the nurses will, albeit reluctantly, strike if certain basic demands are not met in ongoing contract talks with Meritor management. The contract expired in mid-March. Pat Race, a Meritor nurse and the president of SEIU Wisconsin, addressed the crowd and stressed the importance of listening to the nurses.
One of the things the nurses have said multiple times is it's time to listen to the nurses. We, at the bedside, know what's important for the bedsides. We know what we need for safety. We know what we need to make sure that our patients have the safest environment possible to work in.
Amanda Husk, a postpartum nurse at Meritor and a member of SEIU Wisconsin, described the current state of negotiations and the union's basic demands.
We are here fighting for a fair contract. We've been in negotiations for several weeks with our administration and so far have not come to an agreement on a fair contract. We are fighting for patient safety and security to our hospitals. We are looking for safe patient care ratios as well as a fair living wage and fair compensation packages so that we can retain our excellent nurses as well as attract future nurses.
A key demand of the nurses, displayed prominently on large banners to everyone driving by in East Wash, was safe staffing levels. Hannah Hageman, a registered nurse at Meritor, says that this demand is nothing new, and it is time for Meritor management to take it seriously.
It feels like it's not acknowledged as much as it should be. I feel like we're here waving signs, running around in tutus with fire hoses. Like, we are very clearly saying there's an issue, and then I feel like it said, everything's fine, you're doing a great job, continue to do what you're doing, you matter, you're doing, like, we're doing such a great job, and it's just like, you're not acknowledging what we're saying, so not really feeling recognized as we would like.
Members of IBEW Local 2304, which represents workers at Madison Gas and Electric, at MPI, and also the paid staff at WORT, were there in solidarity. Retired member Dave Poklonkowski said that the nurses are facing management-imposed time constraints that parallel those impacting other workers, including electrical workers.
The nurses at Meritor and nurses everywhere are having the same issues that we have in the utility industry. You know, recruitment, retention, 24/7, 365 work and coverage. So we have the same kind of issues that they have.
Brandon Cosgrove, Vice President and Chief Steward of Local 2304, promises to support the nurses should they need to strike.
We obviously respect strike lines. When it comes to emergency response, you know, as far as gas leaks and things like that, we do need to provide that essential service to our community. But if it were to come to routine work or anything like that, we would certainly support the nurses at Meritor and not cross that line. So.
Kai Rasmussen was there as a member of the community who had received care from Meritor nurses.
Everybody, myself included, uses healthcare. I really don't think they're asking for a lot. I think they're asking for safe staffing, good patient to nurse ratios, and a livable wage. I'm out here to support them because I think in a really tough moment for me, in a medical emergency at Meritor, I received the most support from the nurses. And I just wanted to be out here and show that the community has their back, and we'll do whatever we can to support them because they take care of us.
Cullen, a nurse in the Madison area who does not work at Meritor, stressed the importance of a good union contract for Meritor nurses, for all nurses, and for patient care in the area.
As a nurse in Madison, I can say, like, look, all of our healthcare system is really closely intertwined. What happens at Meritor affects the other hospitals and clinics in the area. And it's really important for me that all of the nurses in our city and in our community, our region, have strong union representation, so I want to be out here and support them. So I always tell people, look, that when nurses are advocating for better working conditions, our working conditions are your healthcare system.
Amanda Husk reiterated that her union is ready to strike if need be.
We hope that we can make this fair contract in negotiations, but we are here and ready to strike if need be.
That was Amanda Husk, a nurse at Unity Point Meritor Hospital and member of SEIU Wisconsin, speaking Tuesday at a rally in support of Meritor nurses in their current collective bargaining discussions. For Labor Radio, I'm Greg Jaboski.
The April 5th hands-off rally in Madison started at noon at the State Street entrance of the Capitol building with crowd estimates over 10,000 people. In addition to songs, chants, and speeches, signs spoke to the variety of grievances. Cuts to public programs and benefits, tax breaks for billionaires, illegal abductions, detentions, and deportations, threats against union, free speech, and reproductive rights. Labor Radio talked to several people at the rally about their reasons for attending.
Service workers Eliza Gabriel and Amy Stewart from the Chicago Midwest Regional Joint Board, an affiliate of SEIU, had this to say.
I'm here because I'm really concerned about the state of our government. She's the union president of our organization, and I was the union president. We very much care about workers' rights and what's going on.
So what's important to you?
I have a special needs son, and that's a big part of my life, and I'm not happy with any of his policies and anything going on right now.
Any message you want to send to fellow workers?
Just hold strong and got to fight back and do all you can when you can.
Union members are used to fighting. I think this is a perfect fight for us to get involved in. Protest is the first step of kind of speaking up and saying this is what we want. We need to have a say in our country, in our government, in what happens to us in a daily. This is affecting everyone from, you know, we work in the service industry. We are living paycheck to paycheck. Groceries, everything is gas, and it's just getting worse.
My name's Kristen Schumacher, and I'm with the Western Day and Democracy Project. And our group is here to fight for our rights, for our children's future, and the future of democracy.
What are your biggest concerns?
I'm concerned about everyone who needs these social services to make ends meet. Things like Social Security, Medicaid, cash assistance, food assistance. It's really important that we take care of the least of these amongst us, and one way we do that is make sure we have a democracy. What we don't need to do is provide tax cuts to the rich and cut vital programs and services. Your research for Alzheimer's disease, for cancer, cutting those programs, that's not the answer. We need to make sure that we have a robust system that serves everyone, not just the richest 1%.
My name is Andy Olson. Why I'm out here today to defend America and the American people. We're under a state of emergency basically right now with this Trump-Musk administration and their attacks on the people, on the programs, on our democracy and government. And now is the time for us to stand up. I'm holding the American flag for a number of reasons. One, it stands for the Constitution. It stands for the values we aspire to but don't always reach. And just thinking about the veterans in my family, people I've known, one fellow from Chicago who's a veteran of the war in Spain against Franco. And he was very adamant that we should take the flag back from the right wing. It belongs to the American people, not the right wing. We won on Tuesday against Musk when Crawford was elected, but we will still have pickets at the Tesla dealership every Saturday until Musk is out and is done messing around with our democracy.
My name is Adrienne Heppner, and we're here because we're really frustrated with the things that we're hearing in the news and everything that is going on, all of the people that are being impacted negatively by the cuts to workforce, by all of the threats to people's security, to the future, for our children, for what they're threatening to do to education. We're fed up, and we wanted to find a way to use our bodies and our ability to get out there and get our voices heard and show solidarity with the rest of the people in the U.S. who still believe that there's a moral U.S. out there.
What messages do you have for other people who are out here or who are listening?
Keep showing up.
This is Kevin Marr. I'm with UFAS AFT Local 223. Trump and Elon Musk are the bosses, and they're trying to take away rights from average everyday workers, and we need to stand up and prevent that.
He explains the significance of the Palestinian flag he is carrying.
There's a genocide happening in Palestine, and workers need to stand up and prevent it. Once they're done going for the Palestinians, they're going to come for workers in other countries, and we need to stop them.
We heard comments from people at the April 5th hands-off rally in Madison. Thanks to Greg Jaboski for his audio segment. Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Janine Ramsey.
Come on, feet. Cruise with me. Trouble ain't no place to be. Come on, feet. Do your thing.
On Friday, April 4th, staff at the Worker Justice Wisconsin office supported a construction worker in his pursuit of reimbursement for a wage theft complaint. He had worked hundreds of hours of overtime and received straight hourly wages instead of time and a half, the legal pay rate for overtime in construction. Keith Steffen interviewed Robert Crystal and Socorro Cortez about the Worker Justice Wisconsin action.
My name is Robert. I'm the program director at Worker Justice Wisconsin.
My name is Socorro Cortez, and I'm one of the organizers from Worker Justice Wisconsin.
You participated in an action in Middleton recently. What was the name of the company that your action was at?
Stone Concepts.
And what was the nature of the complaint?
The owner don't pay him. What happened is he filed a complaint with DWD, and DWD say the owner.
The owner owed about
almost $7,000.
Yeah, for I think it's around 563 hours of overtime over the course of the last 2 years. So like Socorro said, the DWD ruling went in the employee's favor.
Yeah, thank you, Robert.
So the employee had followed the normal procedure for filing a complaint with the Department of Workforce Development, and the employer had not responded. Is that correct?
Well, the employee wants to pay a few payments, which is just not right. And then also they own him for 4 years because they don't pay him overtime. And we only can help him to recuperate 2 years. And then after that, he decided to file a small claim. And then we went to the action.
Yeah. So that's a really important thing that I think a lot of folks don't know about Wisconsin's laws on wage theft, which is they have a lot of issues. But one of the big issues is that you can only recuperate up to the last 2 years. And so legally, there was no way to recuperate the money from beforehand, even though morally, he's obviously entitled to it.
The $7,000 was just in the last 2 years, and there was more money prior to that.
Yes.
How has the company responded since your action?
The company spoke with a reporter by the name of Eric Gunn for the Wisconsin Examiner, and the company told the reporter that they were going to pay. The employee was demanding that rather than a six-month payment plan, that they simply abide by the payment procedure outlined by the DWD. So yeah, the demand was just comply with the process.
In the Wisconsin Examiner article, it said that the company had stated that they were sending the money to their lawyer. Is that correct?
Yes, I think that's correct.
Has the payment then been relayed to the employee?
Not yet. In the letter that the employee gave to the employer, it said, please comply with this process within 2 weeks upon receipt of this letter. So today, I guess Friday, when this airs, it'll have been 1 week, and then they'll have another week. And the normal process is that the employer would actually make the payment to the DWD, and the DWD disburses that payment. But we have not heard anything directly from the employer so far.
You'll have to wait another week in order for the payment to reach the DWD and then come to the worker.
Right. Or if the DWD agent maybe reaches out to us and says, oh, money showed up, the employer may let us know that they've sent it. They may not. I mean, the important thing is that the DWD agent tells us we got the money.
Have you had any other complaints about this particular company in the past?
No.
To the best of your knowledge, this is the only situation that has arisen.
Yeah, I guess that's the only one he decided to speak up. But we don't know if somebody else it happened, because if they don't pay him overtime for 4 years, it means it happened to somebody else.
Very possible.
Yeah, that seems likely. And there are other employers within the construction industry where this might also have happened.
We got a couple of irons in the fire. Wage theft in the construction industry is endemic. Construction workers are probably, if not half, close to half of the folks that come to us with wage theft. This is not the only one.
My name is Keith Steffen. I'm reporting for Labor Radio.
UAW President Sean Fain spoke to union members in a live stream event. Carol Weidel has some highlights.
UAW President Sean Fain, in a live Facebook stream, addressed UAW members on Wednesday night. He spoke about the political climate and the working class struggles.
We're in the middle of two massive transformations. One is in our economic system, where the rules of global trade are being upended, and with huge implications for workers everywhere. And the other major transformation is in our political system, where fundamental rights are being eroded with huge implications for workers everywhere. Both of these changes are happening at the same time. And I know that can create a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt about the future. But tonight, I'm going to talk about what's going on, what our union's doing about it, and what it means for the working class. But first, before we get into this, as always, I want to recognize and honor our members that are out there standing up against corporate America. Workers at Alamo Drafthouse in New York City have been on strike for more than 50 days. They're taking on parent company Sony, which fired 70 workers so they could add more to their overflowing coffers. And the workers haven't backed down. At Wellesley College, non-tenure track faculty have been on strike for 2 weeks, and they're demanding a livable wage. At Cummins in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, UAW members who make components for military and heavy construction equipment are currently on strike. Like so many UAW members, they're saying hell no to tears. This is a company that made $13.2 billion between 2022 and 2024. They can afford to do better. And at Lockheed Martin and General Dynamics Electric Boat, our defense industry members are fighting for a better life, and they're ready to do whatever it takes to get it. These companies are reaping billions in profit and don't want to give workers their fair share. But UAW members at these companies are fighting back. They're demanding decent pay, fair treatment, and retirement security.
Fain addressed the political climate and Trump's attacks on labor and free speech.
And I've said this a lot recently, you know, we disagree with 99% of what the Trump administration is doing when it comes to attacks on labor and working class people, attacks on free speech. We are supporting national mobilizations against the Trump administration's attacks on federal workers and immigrants. We've joined lawsuits against the Trump administration's attacks on higher education institutions. And I cannot stress enough how strongly we oppose this administration's attacks on our freedom of speech and basic civil liberties. We also oppose the free trade disaster. We oppose these policies under Republicans and Democrats, and we will support their reversal under Republicans and Democrats. We aren't going to change our position on ending free trade just because Trump's president. But no matter what party you voted for, understand this. There is a direct line between the free trade disaster and the political chaos in this country. Plant closures and mass layoffs resulted in intense pain and suffering and anger for hundreds of thousands of working families in our country. All that pain and anger had to go somewhere.
Sean Fain closed his remarks with the expectation to have more live streams to talk to members and answer their questions.
And so, like I said, we're going to keep doing this. I want to keep, doing more Facebook Lives and get back into doing this so we can communicate more and talk about what's going on. So I really thank everybody that tuned in tonight and look forward to more of these in the future. So thank you.
Thanks to Greg Jaboski for the audio. Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Carol Weidel.
Labor Radio's Greg Jaboski spoke with the president of UW-Madison's Faculty and Staff Union about a resolution passed by the UW Faculty Senate this week and about recent attacks on free speech and academic freedom.
On Monday of this week, April 7th, the Faculty Senate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison passed a resolution condemning police violence at the pro-Palestinian protest encampment on UW's Library Mall on May 1st of last year. On a vote of 79-52, the university's official faculty body passed a resolution that, among other things, quote, be it resolved that the UW-Madison Faculty Senate condemns the May 1st, 2024 police violence against protesters on Library Mall. The resolution also called for the restoration of the protest decision-making team and protest administrative review team, and quote, the enshrinement of shared governance, including faculty, staff, and student oversight and review of university responses to expressive activities on UW-Madison campus. Labor Radio spoke yesterday to Barrett Elward, president of the United Faculty and Academic Staff, or UFAS, at UW-Madison, who described the resolution.
What we had passed this past Monday at the Faculty Senate meeting was a resolution condemning the university administration's response to the pro-Palestinian encampment last spring. The resolution was decrying the use of violence specifically to break up this peaceful protest and gathering on, like, very flimsy grounds.
Elward explained UFAS's role in relation to the Faculty Senate and the union's role in supporting the resolution.
Many of these faculty senators and people that were involved in the passing of this resolution, they work with us in UFAS, but they may not necessarily themselves be members. UFAS has played a role in supporting the encampments, and we have worked with the faculty senators that have brought this resolution to Faculty Senate and gotten it passed.
Elward explained, however, that the powers of the Faculty Senate have been seriously curtailed by state actions of the recent Governor Scott Walker administration. Similar actions also seen in the curtailment of power of labor unions and workers during that same time.
So the Faculty Senate is one of the shared governance bodies at UW-Madison. All of the UW system has the shared governance bodies. I'm a little hesitant to use the word governance. It's a throwback from prior to some Scott Walker legislation, when these shared governance bodies had actual governing capabilities, right? So the Faculty Senate is the governance body that is comprised of faculty. They could pass resolutions that were binding that would actually change policy at the university. This is no longer the case. These governance bodies don't actually do any governing. It can be useful as a way to communicate directly with administration, but, I mean, for a decade now or more, the administration at all UW campuses sets the rules and the policy, and the shared governance bodies are strictly advisory.
As well as camping regulations, the university cited safety concerns as the reason behind its actions against pro-Palestinian protesters. Elward asks, whose safety?
I mean, the university will say, oh, there are concerns of anti-Semitism, those sorts of things, and I don't want to just wave away anti-Semitism, but it's curious to me that there's always the focus on safetyism or whatever, you know, who gets to feel safe, right? Like, it's not the Palestinian-American students, Palestinian-Americans, Palestinians who have come to study here, who the university is basically telling that it's fine if your family is slaughtered in Gaza. It's fine. You know, in fact, we are going to use our endowment, and we are going to invest in companies that profit from these things. We are going to do research that benefits the companies that make these weapons that are killing your family, right? And we are going to send police in to break up your peaceful protest. You don't get to feel safe.
To Elward, the issue of support for Palestinians has become common human sense.
I don't want the university's endowment profiting off of and invested in these companies that profit off of, you know, making weapons of destruction and war, and that are used as, like, I think it's important to say that this is not a controversial thing to say. Every credible human rights organization, the UN, the International Criminal Court, the International Court of Justice, all agree that what's going on in Gaza and now the West Bank is a genocide, and it's still ongoing.
That was Barrett Elward, president of UFAS. For Labor Radio, I'm Greg Chbosky.
Workers at Group Health Cooperative will vote in a union election. Carol Weidel has the story.
On Wednesday, Group Health Cooperative of South Central Wisconsin, or GHC, provided an update on unionization to all GHC members who receive health care at GHC clinics. This statement follows a National Labor Relations Board decision on the proposed bargaining unit. A bargaining unit in labor relations is a group of employees with a clear and identifiable community of interests in dealing with management. The bargaining unit is a group of eligible workers who will vote in a union election. The NLRB determined that all direct care employees across all 7 clinic locations, not just Capital Clinic employees, will decide on a union to represent them. This includes all full-time, regular, part-time employees working in or providing services through behavioral health, chiropractic, dermatology, health education, laboratory, pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, primary care, optometry, radiology, and urgent care departments and interpreters. At an earlier hearing before the NLRB, the employer questioned the composition of the bargaining unit. It seemed to this reporter that service providers often change clinics in response to staffing needs. Since that hearing, the NLRB decided that the reach of the bargaining unit will include all 7 clinics. In setting the record straight on March 12th, GHC stated that, quote, "We respect the rights of our employees to explore unionization," unquote. The NLRB, in the April 9th update, suggested the dates of May 6th, 7th, and 8th for an in-person NLRB-supervised election. These dates are not yet agreed to by SEIU or the NLRB, but GHC will continue working with NLRB and the SEIU to come to an agreement on the elections dates. Group Health Cooperative is the second co-op to explore unionization. In the year 2020, Willie Street Cooperative staff bargained their first contract. Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Carol Weidel.
UAW Local 291 in Oshkosh is striking Cummins Incorporated, and the local is holding a rally open to all supporters. Tomorrow, Saturday, April 12th, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., you can join striking Local 291 Cummins workers and stand up together for power for a fair contract at the local union hall, 1118 High Street in Oshkosh. For more info, go to the Wisconsin AFL-CIO website at WISAFLCIO.org/news.
There is a rally for Wisconsin higher education scheduled for noon Thursday, April 17th at the Library Mall. It's part of the National Day of Action for Higher Education. It is sponsored by UFAS and the TAA. Demands include a meet and confer relationship between UW-Madison and its workers, and that UW-Madison join the Big Ten Mutual Defense Compact to defend academic freedom, institutional integrity, and the research enterprise. I'm Gil Halstead. Thank you to the Labor Radio Collective, including reporters Greg Jaboski, Janine Ramsey, Carol Wydell, Sean Hagerup, Riant Novinska Lois, Carlos Davalos, Assistant Robin G., and Damage Control Specialist Joanne Powers. Special thanks to Keith Steffen, our reader coordinator, and to all of our readers and the members of IBEW Local 2304 WORT Staff Collective.
And I'm Ann Habel. We'd also like to thank all of the generous contributors to Labor Radio and WORT. Please stay tuned for the Blues Cruise with Dave Watts and Professor Bill Clark.
You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
The Barrymore Theater presents Dan Savage's Hump Film Fest, 20 years and going hard, Saturday, April 19th at 7:30 p.m. Hump has been serving up hot, heavy, and hilarious dirty film shorts to the masses for two whole decades, and we're kicking off this milestone year with the first of two all-new lineups for 2025. The mission of Hump is to create a public space for sex positivity, representation, and inclusivity, which, given our modern circumstances, is more important than ever. These are films made by real people for real people. More information at BarrymoreLive.com. The Barrymore Theater presents Dan Savage's